te vasudevaya. Reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, from the 6th chapter, entitled Jnana Yoga, text number 30. Yo mam pasyati sarvatra, sarvam chamai pasyati, tasyam na pranasyami, sacha mena pranasyati. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Purport. A person in Krishna consciousness certainly sees Lord Krishna everywhere, and he sees everything in Krishna. Such a person may appear to see all separate manifestations of the material nature, but in each and every instance, he is conscious of Krishna, knowing that everything is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the development of love of Krishna, a position transcendental even to material liberation. At this stage of Krishna consciousness, beyond self-realization, the devotee becomes one with Krishna in the sense that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee, and the devotee becomes full in loving Krishna. An intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee then exists. In that stage, the living entity can never be annihilated, nor is the personality of Godhead ever out of the sight of the devotee. To merge in Krishna is spiritual annihilation. A devotee takes no such risk. It is stated in the Brahma Samhita 5.38, Premanjana churito bhakti vilo chanena santasa devari di yesu vilokayanti yam shama sundaram achincha gunasvarupam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by the devotee whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He is seen in his eternal form of Shama Sundar, situated within the heart of the devotee. At this state, Lord Krishna never disappears from the sight of the devotee, nor does the devotee ever lose sight of the Lord. In the case of a yogi who sees the Lord as Paramatma within the heart, the same applies. Such a yogi turns into a pure devotee and cannot bear to live for a moment without seeing the Lord within himself. So a devotee always sees Krishna anywhere and everywhere. It's nice that Srila Prabhupada in the purport is giving that verse from the Brahma Samhita, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Santarasadevari Vyesu Vilokayanti Yam Shama Sundaram Chincha Guna Swarupam Govindam Adipurusam Tamaham Bhajami. These eyes that are tinged with the self of love, right? Or loving eyes, that is something extraordinary. In the Rig Veda, it is also mentioned. It says, let the entire world look upon me with loving eyes, and let me look upon the world with loving eyes. So, kind of just the opposite of the world we live in, where everyone looks at everyone else with suspicion. Suspicion is actually the normal attitude. You see someone, think, you know, if it's a stranger, then it's absolutely suspicious. If it is somebody you know, still suspicious. I mean, even your own mother is suspicious. And that's the situation in this modern age. Love, yes, but trust, right? Who do you trust? It's very difficult to trust anyone. Can we even trust ourselves? I mean, now we're talking about it, about trusting. So it is very difficult, because people are not in control of themselves. So it is an age where this has become so rare, premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena, to see with loving eyes, that it has become something, practically unheard of. And, I mean, Prabhupada, all right, you know, but that's sort of like an exceptional personality. And then others, trying. trying but difficult. But it's very nice that Prabhupada takes that point. One could also say, look at it philosophically. You know, philosophically try to see Krishna behind everything. Try to see that the material energy is also Krishna's energy. So whenever we see anything, know it to be Krishna's energy. There's a story where Prabhupada was in Calcutta during the Second World War. And Prabhupada was fond of kachoris. As a child, they called him Kachora Mukhi, right? Which you translate with kachori face. So that was Prabhupada's nickname as a child, right? Kachori face. Well, he was into it. So, during the Second World War, his wife had just made kachoris, and they were hot on the plate, and he sat down, and then a siren went off with an alarm, a bomb alarm. So everyone was running for, you know, the bomb shelters and everything. Like, yeah, my kachoris, you know. It's like, so he didn't go. He stayed. He stayed and he was having his kachoris, and meanwhile he saw the bombs coming down. And he said, that was also Krishna. That was also Krishna, but that was not the lovable form of Krishna. And he said, that was like the universal form of Krishna. That form of Krishna, the destroyer. We may recall in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna saw the universal form of Krishna. An enormous form with many, many mouths, and all the heroes of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, 640 million, were being crunched up in the teeth of that, of these endless mouths, like potato chips. So we can just visualize the whole thing. So that's the universal form. So when Prabhupada saw the bombs coming, he said, yes, that's also Krishna, but that's not the loving form of Krishna. But in this way, a devotee can see Krishna everywhere, always, whatever happens, Krishna. There is the ultimate cause of things and the immediate cause for things. The immediate cause, let us give the simple example. Let's say I walk up and for some reason I have a disagreement with the temple, so I take a brick and I throw it through the window and crash. We actually had such a situation in one temple during the Sunday feast. Suddenly bricks started flying through the glass, and glass splashed all over the temple room, and all the devotees were ducking. We first thought it was a bomb blast or something. Some were under the tables. Anyway, it turned out that somebody had passed away next door, and they had the body in the house on the table. And it felt like this Hare Krishna temple next door, so much noise. And you know, we've tolerated it every day, but today, no. And then they smashed the windows. Anyway, so then, you know, we go, who broke the windows? Said, the brick. The brick did it. Yeah, it was the brick. It's like, you know, saw it myself. That brick just, you know, just broke all the glass. Serious, that brick did it. Yes, that's the immediate cause. But there's also a more remote cause behind, right? The guy who picked up the brick and threw the brick. And so, in the same way, there is the immediate cause in this world to so many things. You know, the guy just cut me, you know what I mean? He cut me. He, you know, shake a fist, and so on. But if one can see a more remote cause, then one can see, I had it coming, my karma. My karma, it was due to me. For all the cutting I've done, I got cut a little bit today. Let's see. That is a more philosophical way of perceiving reality. more seeing the remote cause. And the ultimate cause is Krishna, the Supreme Lord. In the Bhagavatam, there is the example of the bull Dharma, we may remember, who was being attacked by Kali. And the bull had three legs were broken. Kali had smashed the legs with a stick. Yeah. So Kali was standing with the stick in his hands next to the bull. Only one leg was still remaining. When Maharaj Pariksit arrived on the spot, the local police force. And so he goes, all right, what's going on here? You know what I mean? Okay, show your license. Yeah. And you know? And Maharaj Pariksit basically could see Kali standing there with the stick, and it seemed that, like, he was the perpetrator. But just to make sure, he asked the victim. So he asked Dharma, who is the cause of this? And Dharma, while Kali is standing next to him with the stick, says, it's hard to say. I mean, I would have said, him. Kidding, right? Well, many of us might have said that, but Dharma is more exalted than an ordinary person. And Dharma actually said, it's hard to say. It could be the result of my karma. It could be the will of providence. It could be the Supreme Lord. It's hard to say who is the cause of what had happened to me. So, I mean, Dharma was very exalted, yeah? Because even in a trying situation, Dharma saw the bigger picture. The tendency is, klaibhyam asmagamam parta, then in the trying circumstances, we begin to see small. Ksudram ridaya durbhagyam. Everything, reality becomes smaller. As soon as it gets a little difficult, we forget the bigger picture. That is really. And the bigger picture, of course, is, soul doesn't take birth, soul doesn't die, cannot be, the soul is not slain when the body is slain. That is the theme of the second chapter in the many verses. Nainam shindanti sastai, nam dati pavaka, soul cannot be dried by the wind, not burned by fire, not drowned, not... what was it? Cut to pieces, did I have that moment? Anyway, all these things cannot be done to the soul. So, one who lives deeply in this philosophical understanding is an enlightened person, undoubtedly. Is someone who is peaceful. But greater still is one who is premanjana, who is seeing with loving eyes. Because one who is premanjana, he is actually seeing Krishna behind everything, and how Krishna is unlimitedly kind. So, okay, you know, I mean, he may be kind, but there are a lot of calamities in the world. And that seems very harsh, right? Very harsh. Many traditions in the world have a picture of God as being a bit on the harsh side, you know, at times. He may be nice, but he has his moods, when the thunderbolts are coming down, if you know what I mean, or a big earthquake, or a calamity. And we don't have to name them, there are so many. So, at that time, at the time of a calamity, some people just turn away from God. In the Old Testament, this is one of the few things I remember from the Bible. I'm not so educated in the Bible, actually, to tell you the truth, somehow or other. My family was more into making money than into going to church. But one point In the Old Testament, it comes up that the angel of death is going to come and in every house take the eldest son, but he'll save those houses where the blood of a ram has been smeared on the doorpost. So that sounds like a God who wants blood. Right?
Really?
Yeah, when I heard it, I thought, here is a God who wants blood, and okay, we can satisfy. He won't take the blood of human beings if you give him some animal blood. So that is kind of, again, having a vision of a being up there who is quite, quite heavy. So there is a lot of that in all traditions in the world. India also has many rituals to pacify various deities. Africa has a few, and you know, like as you can see, Christianity also. So in this way, we see this wound. But the devotee sees very different. The devotee sees even suffering in this world as Krishna's kindness. How can a devotee see all the suffering in this world as Krishna's kindness? Well, it's like this. When the living being turned away from Krishna and came to the material world out of curiosity, they say curiosity kills the cat. And because the living being was thinking for a moment, what would it be like if I would be worshipped? And it's an interesting thought. And some thought, no, this is rubbish. And they went back to serving Krishna. Others thought, well, really an interesting thought. And thought, well, maybe I should give it a try. And here we are in the material world. Krishna, of course, is the ultimate cause for the material world. Ultimately, Krishna is the origin of everything in this world. So if you think about that, then Krishna is also the ultimate cause for suffering in this world. And therefore, it's not uncommon that some people, when a calamity falls upon them, they become very angry. And they become angry with God. And there are plenty of people like that. And yet a devotee doesn't see like that. Because the devotee sees that Krishna, yes, he put some sand in the sweet rice. He did. Otherwise we would be eating this sweet rice forever. Right? They would be here in the material world and try to enjoy here and try to enjoy there. If there was no suffering, well, you know, we would say, no, it's all right, Krishna. We'll come back to God, but not yet. Right? No, surely we'll come home, but you know, not right away. So we can see how Krishna is full of love, and Krishna could not tolerate any longer. He said, okay, I put a little sand in the sweet rice. And then crunch, crunch. I don't like this world so much anymore. Then we start to think of going back to Godhead. Maybe the suffering is intense. I agree. I also found my share of whatever I got so far intense. But then on the other hand, I can also see that it has greatly contributed to where I am today. And there's no doubt about it. I did not just come to Krishna consciousness because I was so pious. I must be very honest. I mean, maybe I was a little pious, but not that pious. But some suffering in this world kind of gave me that little push. Where I thought, yes, now it's time to go back to the spiritual world. So in this way, a devotee can even see suffering with loving eyes can even see there is a loving Supreme Lord behind it who's saying, what are you doing here in this material world, in this material body? It's just not where you belong. Don't be attached to this. Give it up now. We recall the story of Indra. Indra had been cursed and he fell down from the heavenly planets. And Indra had to go through the condition of being a hulk. And there Indra lived in his mud pool with his whole family, his beautiful pig wife, and all his little piglets. And, you know, they were very, very happy rolling around in the dirt. And then one day Brahma, he was seeing all this because the demigods, they can perceive. So Brahma was seeing this, thinking, oh no, look at Indra's condition. I mean, this is just too much. I mean, too much. Really too much. I can appreciate that how Brahma felt, because I once went to the Polish Woodstock Festival of Indrajumna Maharaj, and it's part of a bigger festival. There is like 400,000 kids that are part in a music festival, and then you have the main stage with all the bands, that's nothing to do with us. And then you have, somewhere in the middle of it, off to one side, you have the Village of Peace. And then it's quite big. It's a big festival. And next to the Village of Peace is the beer camp. And it's just as big. It's just as big as the Village of Peace. Right? And then in the middle, they have, of the festival, there is just a pipe. And water is just shooting out. And there's all these people, that's the bathroom. Right? They all camp in little tents in the festival, and that's their bath, and they just all stand under that, and it's quite something. So there was this one fellow, all he had was wearing was shorts. He was extremely fat, and he was lying on the ground in a mud pool, and I've never seen a human being as close to a pig as that. That was really something extraordinary. So I can appreciate how Brahma felt when he saw Indra in that condition. And he just felt like, oh no, I gotta go and save him. This is too much. So Brahma went to Indra and said, Indra, it's over now. Indra, it's over. The result of this curse is over. Indra, I give you the benediction. You can return. You can return to your original position. Indra said, no, I can't go. How can I leave my lovely pig wife and all my dear piggy? And how can I leave my little piglets? No. I cannot go anywhere. So Indra would not go. And that is a very interesting phenomenon. At that time, he could not understand how abominable that condition was. And oftentimes this is cited as the example. We cannot understand. We cannot understand that how abominable existence in the material world is. We hold on to things and know, but there are so many nice things. So many nice things, you know. We have a nice car. It's a dangerous monster. A car, actually. Yesterday we had a close misser. Came from Ladysmith to Durban, and at Maritzburg there was a car tire that flew through the hedge that divides the roads and hit us like front on. Well, that's of course it was a good car, so nothing happened. But later on we saw that the whole front was just split open with a dint in the chassis, so it was quite an impact. A little higher and that would have been disappearance day. I guess. And we think, oh, thank God, saved.
safe. Now I can stay a little longer in this horrible material body. And we're holding on so desperately, so desperately. We have no idea. So Krishna desires, he desires that all the living beings go back to Godhead and make some arrangements. Krishna is certainly not only waiting. It's not only that the devotee is loving the Supreme Lord. Krishna also loves the devotees. Sadanam vidyam mayam sadavo vidyam tvam madanyatena janatena anti vyamanakapi. The Lord is always in the heart of the devotees, and the devotee is always in the heart of the Lord. So it's, Krishna is not passive. Krishna is not only waiting. All right, are they finally going to start praying? Then I'll send them some blessings. Bless for your nice prayer. And a ray of light fell upon you. No, not like that. Krishna is also active. Krishna makes arrangements in our lives. Krishna will do so many things to bring us back to Godhead. Krishna sends us devotees. Brahmanda Brahmite Kuna Bhaktivana Jeev Guru Krishna Prasada Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. Just like when I was about 13, I was riding on a bus, and there was the bus was quite full, but there was one empty seat next to me. And then suddenly this Hare Krishna comes on the bus, and I saw him, and I saw him coming, and I saw him looking at my empty seat. And I think, oh no, oh my God, he's coming in my direction, help. And I went almost in the wall of the bus. And for the first time in years, I started praying, oh God, please don't let him say anything to me. And the Lord answered my prayers, and he never spoke to me. Thank God. But even then, it was a shocking experience. Yeah, a real life Hare Krishna in flesh and blood, you know, sitting next to me in his shocking appearance. You know, I mean, some you don't forget that just like that. Yeah? That was a shock. So things like little by little, Krishna came into my life. What could I say? It wasn't so easy. I first went to the temple in Vrindavan, and I stayed there for some time, but I was in that time on a tourist visa, and I had to go back. And so, just before I got sick also, I got jaundice, I was quite ill, so then I came back to Europe, and I was sort of ill for a few months, and then I moved back into the temple in Amsterdam. Well, I was a little still not well from the jaundice, so they let me stay in the temple for a few days, and they only sent me out like on the third or the fourth day on Sankirtan, usually on the first day, but they gave me 4 days of special concession. And then, so on the fourth day, they called me at about 5:30 in the morning in the temple president's office and said, you want to go on Sankirtan? And I said, Sankhya what? And I didn't even know what it was. And next moment, they said, no, you would like to go, you get to travel. So, you're ready to go? I said, I felt the trouble. But I said, I guess so. Oh, great, you're leaving in 5 minutes, go grab your things. So I grabbed my things, got in the car, and the car drove away, and my mind was like a rubber band. And then we're driving far away to the eastern side of the country. And I'm just a devotee for 4 days. What they had done, they had shaved me up. And as a result, I had a beanie, you know. So, and I was wearing it Hare Krishna style. So I had my beanie, and given me, this is too hot, excuse me. But I had a navy jacket before, you know, good quality. So a lot of devotees don't wear such jackets, they threw it away. And they bought me a nylon jacket. And this nylon jacket was yellow, with a black stripe in the middle, and yellow. So I looked like a wasp. So I felt a little bit strange in these clothes. I sort of had a feeling that I looked like I had just escaped from somewhere. So I was standing on the street feeling very uncomfortable. And then it was in a town very far away from home, and it was quite cold on the street, and then I'm approaching some people, and suddenly the mother of my girlfriend stood in front of me, and it was the wrong place. She wasn't supposed to be there. Yeah? No, really, it's like, you know, it's like you go to Cape Town and you walk into, you know, your neighbor. You know? Yeah. So it was such a shock that when she approached me, I said, she said, "What are you doing here?" And I just blurted out, "Lady, I've never met you in my life." I know. I shouldn't have said that. But it just sort of came out of my mouth. And then once you've said it, you're locked in. You know? You can't go back. So I kept on repeating it. And she said, "No, I can't believe it. I can't believe it." I go, "Well, I really met you never. I met you before." And she's looking at me like, "No." Anyway, she didn't fall for it. So I was mentally destroyed. My first day out on books, it was too much, that was it. But the second day wasn't much better. The second day I was sitting in the back of the van, and the devotees, they had taken a shopping cart from a supermarket to move the books around. You know, devotees had borrowed it. And in front, the Sankirtan van had a compartment which was closed, and that's where the older devotees were, the Brahmins, and they had 7-Up and cashews and the heating. And we, the new devotees, were sitting in the back on the boxes where it was minus 15. So we were a little envious. Anyway, they opened the door and we came to the spot and they said, "Give the shopping cart." So I gave it, but the devotee who asked for it was a little passionate and he pulled it out of my hands. My finger got caught. It hurt, and at minus 15 it hurts more. So I came out of the car on the street. I'm blowing on my finger. He goes like, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" I said, "Hurt my finger." He says, "You're not the body, Prabhu." it did warm me up, you know. It did warm me up a bit, I must admit. And then they sent me out with this new devotee and to distribute books. And this new devotee had only 3 words. Jai Nectar Bliss. So I was in a bad mood from the finger. So I was thinking, I'm going to say something nasty to him. And he walked around, he had no gloves. So I said, "You know what's going to happen to you? Your hands are going to freeze because you have no gloves." And he says, "Doesn't matter, Prabhu. I'm not the body." And I was thinking, first a fanatic, and now a madman. You know, and that's when I decided to take a little vacation from Krishna. So I left, I went away, and I went home. And I went on the train, it was a few hours on the train. On the train, I didn't feel well. I had this strange sensation on my legs. I went to the bathroom, looked at it, I start getting boils on my leg. I had never had boils, but by the time I came to my hometown, I had like 5, and there was one getting really big here. I still have a huge scar from that. So that was, somebody doesn't want me to go. Anyway, I was knocked out with these boils, actually, came home. And meanwhile, I got a call. I got a call from a devotee in the temple, and they said there was one devotee. He's an Afro-American devotee. He had said that if he doesn't come back to the temple, I will fast. I will not eat until he comes back. Well, I let him fast for 3 days. And then I went back. But in between, you know, I thought, well, if I take a vacation from the temple for 3 days, I may as well go see a movie. You know, in those days, devotees really would not see a movie. I mean, nowadays, I know many devotees are watching movies. But in those days, you know, no devotee would ever watch a movie. So I thought, okay, may as well take advantage of my holiday and go watch a movie. So I went to the cinema. And when I came to the cinema, in the middle of the movie, suddenly there are devotees coming down the street. You know, I see them coming down the street, devotees. But when they came close, I noticed there was something wrong with the tilak. The leaf on the nose was missing. So I looked at them and said, what's this? There's something fishy about these devotees. Next moment in the movie, they go into a bar, they sit down, they order some beer, some girls are sitting on their laps, and they say, it's good to have a drink after a hard day's work. You know, some sort of advertisement. I was so angry, how dare they? But even the day I tried to be in Maya, Krishna was there. In this way, just we can see that Krishna is just entering into the lives of his devotees, or of even of conditioned souls. And it wasn't so pure. You can see my interest in movies was just one symptom of my lack of purity. There were a few other symptoms as well, which I'm not going to tell you. But you get the idea. So. Yes, but Krishna took interest. Krishna takes interest in us, active interest. Krishna takes interest in bringing us back to the spiritual world. So that is how kind Krishna is. That is how nice Krishna is. In this way, one can really understand how the devotee is always in the heart of Krishna. It's not only Krishna is waiting and fine, and then he'll send us some blessings if we're good. There's a lot more. And that's very important, I think. And that we understand that. How much Krishna is eager to bring us back home, back to Godhead. Therefore we must see that whatever happens, it's Krishna. Good or bad, it's Krishna. Krishna is arranging it all. And if we see like that, then we can take it, even when difficulty comes to us, then we can take it. Because then we can trust, it's, all right, this may be difficult, but it is for the ultimate good. Yeah. It is Krishna is behind it. Yeah. So it must be good. And with that faith, a devotee can be very peaceful in all circumstances in life. So that's very rare. In this world, people are so caught up, you know, by the ups and downs of life. And of course, even we who are not so advanced are also a bit caught up. But still it helps a little bit to know that there is another perspective. Because we can take shelter. And we can take shelter. What do you take shelter of if you don't have Krishna? If you lose everything, then what do you have to take shelter of? We had one devotee in Amsterdam who was a new devotee, and he lived in a nice house, and the devotees were saying, why do you maintain this house? You're not married, you're just living there all by yourself. Why don't you just come and move in the temple? He was saying like, well, I don't know. Anyway, then the devotees convinced him a bit later, why don't you come with us to Vrindavan? He went to Vrindavan, and while he was in Vrindavan, his whole house burned to ashes. And then he had to move into the temple. See? So that was Krishna. He could see it. He could see it. It was his good fortune that he had associated with the devotees enough that he could see, all right, I guess Krishna wants me to move in the temple. There's also the story about the Krishna book and how Prabhupada had written the Krishna book, but they were 19,000 pounds short for the publication. And Shyamasundar had a connection with George Harrison. So Prabhupada told Shyamasundar, just ask George for a donation. And George said, oh, you know, Shyamasundar said, no, he, you know, everybody asks him for money. He's very sensitive about that. It's like, you know, it's, I never ask him for money. It's really like, it's like, it will be very difficult. Prabhupada said, don't worry, Krishna will help you. So, oh my God, what do you do now? So that evening, there was a dinner, and George was there, Shyamasundar was there, and Shyamasundar sat next to George. And, you know, they went through the whole dinner, and it was time for the dessert. And still he hadn't asked him. He'd think, oh, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? I have the order of my guru, and if I don't ask him, it's an offense to guru. But if I ask him, my friendship with him will be finished. What do I do? What do I do? So finally he says, George, yes, Shyam, you know, Prabhupada has written a new book. Oh, really, yes, it's a really nice book about Krishna, you know. Oh, George says, very interesting. Yes, Shyamasundar, yes, but, you know, he's a little short of the printing cost, and he asked me to ask you if you could donate. And George's face is getting all tight and pale. Oh my God, he could donate 19,000 pounds. And George looked like really upset. Then suddenly a lightning bolt and a loud thunderclap, and all the lights went out. About 20 seconds later, the light came back on, and George, with a big smile, right, pulled out his checkbook and said, how can I refuse after that? So in this way we can see how Krishna is very actively involved in our life, in our spiritual life. He's there. He's with us all the time. We're never alone, never. Krishna makes all kinds of arrangements for us. He arranges everything. So we need not, and he'll make sure that the opportunities come. He'll give us opportunities. Yeah. And all we have to do is be prepared. Just like yesterday in the car when that wheel was flying. Well, I've been in a few of these car situations in my life, you know, where cars rolled and where I was flying and a few other varieties. So, therefore, where the driver said the window was getting fogged up and I said, go, like, let a little air in the car, and it was too late and we were off the road, on the grass, and back on the road, and on the wrong lane, and on the grass on the other side, and going up and down, and I was calling out, Krishna, Krishna, and yesterday also, Krishna, because, yeah, we must be prepared, prepared, that when the opportunity comes, or when the situation comes, that we are prepared to take shelter of Krishna. You know? I mean, yeah, it would be really, you know, stupid if at the end of your life you say, Mickey Mouse. And then you leave this world, you know, that was it. That would be quite a mistake. Someone wants a pen? Huh? You need a pen? I have a better pen. You can get a second use, but auspicious pen. Turn it, yep. So in this way, we cannot always see Krishna. That may be a fact. But and then there are moments that we do see Krishna, that Krishna reveals himself in some way or other, in a dream or in real life, and something happens and it's just more than coincidence. So like that, sometimes we clearly see Krishna. We were speaking about something, you open up the Gita and it's exactly about that, you know, on the page. Like that, you can see Krishna. But many times also, we don't see Krishna. But we prepare, we chant, we take shelter of the name of devotional service. And then, at times when we need to take shelter, then we can take shelter. Otherwise, we'll be harmed. You cannot expect. As I was saying, my family was more engaged with business than with other things. And at the end of her life, I told my mother, I said, now it's time to turn to God. And then she said, no, I can't, I have no faith. Yeah, the whole life you don't practice, then your faith becomes weak. At that time. You wrote everything down now? I want my questions. You can finish. He's writing a book.
Chapter one.
So, it's very nice that we have a temple and that we just come together on Sundays and other days for festivals, because it gives us extra nourishment, no matter what, to somehow or other carry on. Please, can you elaborate on the extra months of Purusottam Adhikamas? Are there any special observances for Vaishnavas during this period? It is said it is a month where we, just like in Kartik, where the benefit of our service is intensified. And therefore, during that month, just like in the month of Kartik, we often take a vow to do something extra. One can take advantage of such occasions to do something extra in devotional service. Can one drink tea or coffee on Ekadasi? No, coffee is a bean. And coffee in general, we don't drink it on any day. So it's two times out on a Ekadasi. Now, coffee and tea are not helpful in devotional service. They may be helpful to stay awake for truck drivers, but they're not helpful in devotional service. So we give it up. These are just the drinks of Kali Yuga, you see. In Kali Yuga, people drink all these kind of things, drinks that pep them up and keep them awake, to keep on going in an artificial way of life. This is, and not only coffee, there are also energy drinks that are also spiked with caffeine. They also count like that. You know, something like Red Bull, I mean, I'm sorry about it, but it's really not on. And, you know, and that thing that they call the real thing, well, I can tell you, it's not the real thing. So Coca-Cola is out. It's loaded up with caffeine. Some even say, there is a rumor I heard about Coca-Cola, not just a vague rumor, but a consistent rumor, that in the secret formula of Coke, that there is beef extract. Yeah. Which is not surprising, because, for example, the Americans, they put beef extract on everything. Like, that's, for example, the French fries in McDonald's, the recipe is beef extract. So if you think, well, I'll just have the chips, because I'm a vegetarian. No, they are dipped in beef extract. So, no coffee, no beef extract. Better not, nothing from McDonald's. And the only thing we use McDonald's for is the bathrooms. Wherever in the world, you know, they have very good bathrooms. But otherwise, no. And tea and coffee, no, I'm so sorry. I've come across devotees, both initiated and non-initiated, who eat mushrooms. Ooh. Apparently, the justification for this is that it is cultured mushrooms.
Ah, yes.
But probably a French mushroom. I see. Well, please give an explanation of this. Thank you. All right. Yeah. Well, the Vedic scriptures are not really recommending that we eat mushrooms. And there are other things also. Srila Prabhupada told the devotees not to eat mushrooms. But when devotees were in countries, like in some countries in Southeast Asia, mushrooms are in every meal, you know, practically speaking. And Prabhupada said, well, you know, it's not so serious. Some of the devotees said, sometimes, you know, we get into a situation, we eat some mushrooms. And there Prabhupada didn't make it like, so he said it's not so serious. But we are not taking mushrooms like that. But it's also not mortal sin. It's not the same as eating flesh. But it's not recommended, not at all recommended, mushrooms. Now that we go on about tea, coffee, mushrooms, I may as well add onions, garlic, and a few of these other things. There is a story, a Puranic history, about a Brahmana who was performing a yajna. And in Vedic times, Brahmanas were very powerful. Not only could they light the fire by mantra, their mantras were so powerful. In those days, they sometimes used to sacrifice an animal in the sacrifice and then kill the animal. But then by mantra, they would revive the animal. Now, this Brahmana was performing such a sacrifice, and his good wife was expecting at the time. And they say that when ladies are expecting, that they have this urge to eat something. And they say that if they don't, the Vedic literatures say, that if they don't fulfill that urge, that they will have a child that will always be drooling from the mouth. Okay, Vedic knowledge. Yeah? Now you know. So this lady, the wife of the Brahmana, she had a desire to taste some of that cow flesh. So while the husband, the animal had been killed, and then while they weren't looking, she took a little piece of the flesh. Then later, her husband, he just by mantra brought that cow back to life. And suddenly the flesh in her hand also became alive. And she just like
was disgusted and she threw it on the earth. And where it touched the earth, it created onions and garlic and also carrots. I just had some carrot juice this morning. I'm not sure if it's the same ones that we had eaten. Prabhupada didn't tell us to not eat carrots. But the onions and garlic, well, at least we know a Puranic reason why we don't take onions and garlic. And mushrooms, I have no story about mushrooms. But for us, if Prabhupada said, don't do it, that's really good enough. That's good enough. And we put our trust in him. We know that whatever he said, we trust it. We trust that that will take us back to Krishna. If Prabhupada said no mushrooms, then we know that Krishna doesn't like it. That's for us quite clear. Can you explain further the meaning of a golden age of Satya Yuga, which will last 10,000 years within the age of Kali?
He's the one.
In the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, there is a meeting that takes place between Ganga Devi and Krishna. And in that, and there's a discussion. Ganga Devi, Krishna is explaining, he says, in the age of Kali, many people will take bath in your waters and they will become purified from sin just by bathing in your waters. And this will continue for at least the beginning of the age of Kali. And then Krishna stopped speaking. So Ganga said that's very nice that people will be bathing in their waters and purified from sinful reactions and so on. The only thing that puzzles my mind, you said in the beginning, they'll bathe in my waters. And she said, then after that, what will happen to me? Ganga was getting worried. So Krishna said, then I will personally appear. And then, through the chanting of my name, I will inaugurate the Sankirtan movement. And through this Sankirtan movement, a 10,000 year golden age will come about. And in this golden age, there will be one class of men, Ekavarna, only one Varna, not four Varnas, not Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, no. Only Ekavarna, Haribhakta. Only one class of men, devotees of the Lord. So, we understand from the Brahma Vaivarta Purana that in the age of Kali, a golden age will come where everyone will become a devotee. Everyone. So we can just imagine what's going to happen. It's going to be more than just a temple on every street corner. We will see many devotees who are spontaneously full of love of God. Imagine if everybody was a devotee. Every shop is only prasadam. Wherever you go, no more coffee, no more tea, no more mushrooms. Oh, it will be amazing. You know, the Harinam party, someone spontaneously walks out with his drum and so the neighbors are looking, hey, he's going out on kirtan. They spontaneously come out. The ladies in the street think, the boys must be hungry, let's bring them some pizza. It is all spontaneous.
So we can understand that in the age of Kali, when that golden age comes, that it will be a time at its peak in that golden age. Many, many people will be overwhelmed by ecstatic symptoms of Krishna consciousness. So it will be amazing. And it's already kind of starting. We're in the sandhya, we're in the joint, we're now in the sandhya period. Yeah, the joint. So it's beginning. It's going to be good.
So it will be a very transcendental, wonderful festival.
Golokira Premadana Harinam Sankirtana. The wealth of Golok will appear in this world due to the chanting of
the Hare Krishna mantra. Devotional service results in us being naturally happy, susukam. But while... what is that word? Seeming, sowing? I find so many things in my nature. While serving us, yes. While serving, I find so many things in my nature that hamper the sense and leaves me and others disturbed. Then I feel like scum. Does Krishna accept this service? Is he pleased?
Oh yes, Krishna is very pleased. And Krishna is very patient. Krishna is very understanding. And Krishna is not so concerned with the faults that we have. There are several examples given. One is the wood that is burning in the fire.
Have you seen that wood? It's not very good quality. You know, it's full of cracks. You know, many holes in it. Yeah.
It's burning. It's going to be ashes. Right? Who cares? Who cares? Right? It really doesn't matter if there was no crack in the wood or if there was a crack in the wood. It's going to be ashes, isn't it? The cracks will be gone. So therefore Krishna is not so concerned with our faults. He knows that they will burn up very quickly in the fire of devotional service. So he happily accepts the service of the conditioned soul. And ananyas chintyantamam yejana paripasate te samityavitam yogaksema vahamyaham. He carries what we lack and preserves what we have. So in this way, he will help us. He will help us to become purified. And if we are in the course of serving, are confronted with our own shortcomings, and we feel like scum, oh, that's good. When you feel like scum, right? Then maybe finally some humility, instead of thinking, I am God's gift on earth, aristocratic, intellectual, by the way, a very handsome also. There's actually no end to my good qualities, and due to time constraints, I must cut off the full list of my good qualities. Hare Krishna, have you met Radhanath Swami? If so, please share with us your time with him. Well, they say that, you know, Prabhupada, when he was in India, he would say that one should have the heart of a Bengali mother and the courage of an Englishman. Yeah. Meaning to say, the British, whatever they did in India, they were courageous. They were courageous, and the Bengali mother, there is no mother like a Bengali mother. They are the most famous mothers all over the world. Bengali mothers, not to offend any other mother. South Africa, and they get in trouble with the South African Mothers Union. What is that? Some?
Some.
Some. Some. Yeah. Samu, huh? Zuma and Samu. Zuma's getting married again and again and again. So, yes, I met Radhanath Swami. So Radhanath Maharaj is like that. He has the heart of the Bengali mother and the courage of the Englishman. Radhanath Maharaj is very gentle and very very concerned about people. He cares a lot about people. At the same time, he's a very bold preacher and very successful preacher. So, Radhanath Maharaj is very, very nice. For years, Radhanath Maharaj was only milking the cows. Okay? Just milking the cows. No one ever thought he would become like a big leader. He was just someone in the cow shed taking care of the cows. And then in due course of time, he took sannyas and now we're on TV now. And because of time, he took sannyas and then became such a deep spiritual leader. Maharaj is always always glorifying the devotees. What he's really good at is glorifying devotees. Extremely good. He always finds something, and it's like he always finds qualities and can elaborate on them, and he does it all day long, just glorifying devotees. And that is his great strength. And that brings everyone together. It is with that, and the mood of humble service to the Vaishnavas is then what he displays. And in that, we can see that he is a leader who is very much loved by the devotees, very much so. And that makes him very extraordinary in many ways. Not that other leaders are not loved, but still he has that special quality in him. And that's why we all appreciate him very much.
What will happen to devotees who at the time of death does not remember Krishna?
Or maybe chant something else?
Ooh.
It depends. It depends what we have done throughout our life. You know, imagine your whole life you chant Hare Krishna practically all day long, always served Krishna, and then you have just a weak moment in that you say some nonsense thing. Okay, let's go back to Mickey Mouse. Right? Imagine even I would say Mickey Mouse and I died, and it was the last thing I said. And then what will happen to me? Will I come back in Mickey Loco or something? I don't know. No, it is also what we've done throughout our life. We should know that as we are leaving the body, we go out of the body, we are above the body, and we are trying to go back in, and we cannot go back in. People, they say, oh, he's gone. You say, no, I'm here. But nobody hears you. They cannot hear you. You can hear them. You can hear everything. Everything. You can see everything. But you cannot. They cannot hear you. I'm still alive. Nobody hears you. Alive! Nobody hears anything. This was the best part of the lecture. That's freaking. Anyway, so so at that time we cannot be heard, but we can hear. We can also still remember. So we can still think of Krishna. Therefore, traditionally in India, during the funeral, they would always call out Satya, Rama Nama Satya Hai, the name of Ram is the truth. That's still very, very common in India at the time of a funeral. Just why? In case that person is still floating around, that, okay, the name of the Lord, oh yes. So one can even chant after. So imagine you die in an accident while you were asleep in the car and dreaming of Maya, which most of the time we do. And then, you know, you leave the body like that. What will happen? You can still chant after. No problem. Go back. So if we practice our whole life, then... there's so many questions. I have to go faster now. Short answers. Didn't realize there's so many. Please teach us how to control ourselves and our minds so that we become trustworthy to ourselves and others around us. No, I cannot teach you that. I cannot teach you. I can tell you that it should be done. We must control our minds and senses. And we must chant Hare Krishna. But then it's up to you. It's up to you to chant Hare Krishna. And it's up to you to serve. And it's up to you to go to the temple. I cannot come every morning to your house and say, get up! Time to get up! I cannot do. No, that you have to do. So, but we can give the advice, we can give the instruction of what to do, but then we all have to do. That is our individual duty. Krishna appears as Lord Buddha and preached atheism, which is directly opposing his own mission in general, who says, and has influenced the atheistic situation of the world today. This seems contradictory and unhelpful. How does Krishna take responsibility for this? And couldn't he have done it in a better way? Well, you know, Krishna, that was really, you really blew it, you know, when you appeared as Buddha. No, actually... you got some bad press for that. Actually what was going on, I was speaking about these Vedic sacrifices where animals were being killed. So people were beginning to use more and more Vedic sacrifices so that they could eat meat in the name of sacrifice. Then Buddha started to preach non-violence. And he said, don't follow the Vedas, follow me. So people began, because he was a very powerful personality, people began to follow him. Gave up the Vedas, stopped all the sacrifices, and in this way stopped meat eating. And that was his purpose. That people then left the Vedas for some time, that's okay. Then he arranged that Lord Shiva would appear as Sankaracharya, bring people back to the Vedas. Lord Sankaracharya preached a philosophy which was close to Buddhism, but taught people to follow the Veda. Then after, Madhvacharya came and he brought people back to the proper conclusions, Ramanuja, and then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give the full understanding of the Vedas. In this way, it was all part of the Lord's plan. And what do you see? The Lord is tricky when he appears in his incarnations. Sometimes he comes to trick people, and that's what Lord Buddha did. He came to take them away from meat eating by trick.
In terms of karma, if I'm experiencing some victimization at the agent of my karma, does he, she also get a reaction for delivering karma to me?
Oh, yes.
Yes. It's really interesting. Like the one who gets shot. Yeah? You know, there's one who pulls the trigger and shoots someone else. So the one who gets shot is the one who's coming good out of the situation, because that person gets relieved from a lot of karma, whatever that karma was. Whereas the one who pulls the trigger makes a lot of bad karma and comes bad out of the situation.
So yes, it's interesting how a person can be an instrument, an agent of karma, and yet, you know, himself accrue karma for that.
Will everyone take the Krishna consciousness in the future? Can the Krishna consciousness movement close down if you don't do anything for preaching? And can Krishna consciousness movement Sankirtan spread beyond this planet? Thank you. To all three, the answer is yes, and there will be the golden age. So the golden age, everything will flourish. Previously, the demigods from higher planets used to come to this planet. Now they don't come, because life has become sinful. But as the devotees become more and more manifest, the demigods will start coming again. We will see them. And oh, the residents of lower planets, they're coming here by flying saucers, isn't it? UFOs. I'm sure they've already picked up the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So the latest vehicles in our Sankirtan fleet are UFOs.
Yes, it will go all over the universe. If we have Tulsi Devi at home, do we keep her always next to Krishna, as she needs sunlight also? What about if there is no sunlight next to the altar? Please advise.
No, surely you don't keep Tulsi always next to Krishna. In fact, if it is very dark, the altar, then don't keep Tulsi there too long. Rather keep Tulsi regularly in the sunlight, and if sometimes if it is cold in the winter, Tulsi may even need one of these hot lamps, you know, that they have, these in whatever they are, ultraviolet, I think it is, that they use for that. Because outside of India, sometimes Tulsi struggles a lot in the cold, like Johannesburg is freezing in the winter. So it may be even in Vrindavan, it is difficult for Tulsi in the winter. Whereas in Mayapur, Tulsi does very well in winter. So Tulsi, yes, we must give her all good care, protect her from... Tulsi doesn't like cold wind. Right? Tulsi needs some sunlight. Tulsi needs water, not too much water, like that. Anyway, that's all I can tell you about Tulsi. I'm not so good with any plants, so even with Tulsi, I'm not the best. There are those who are more expert at taking care of Tulsi than me. Theoretically, I know, but I'm scared of these things.
Should we endeavor to change our situation of suffering or just accept as Krishna's mercy?
Now, we may endeavor to change our suffering situation to an extent, but how far can you take it? You know, it's like, I was telling a story. I was walking in the rain years ago in Europe, and it was just horrible weather, and I saw the poster of the beach, and next moment I was in the travel agent and I'd already bought the ticket. And I flew to Mombasa. Came to Mombasa, it was beautiful weather. I went to the beach, the beach, the beach, the beach. It was so hot. I sat down under the palm tree, and a scorpion, plop. Wow, scorpion. And then another one. So I thought, well, maybe I should go for a swim. And then the locals said, no, 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 you can't go for a swim. I said, it's okay, I can swim. He said, no, no, you can't, because it's high water, and then the sharks come over the reef. So I sat on the beach under a towel, and I could see, I tried to escape my suffering, but because it was due to me, it came back in another way. And instead of walking in the rain with a drop on my nose, the freezing cold rain, I was getting baked on a hot beach. And so what shall I say? Karma is like that. We try to escape our karma, but it comes back somewhere else in another form. You know, it used to be that we used to carry suitcases in our hand. Those are older, remember, before suitcases had wheels. Yeah. People for years, everybody was just carrying them, remember? And it's like, you know, so and you carry it in one hand until your fingers were like all bent, right? You know? Then you carry it in the other hand, right? You carry it on your shoulder. It goes in different ways. You could carry it if you in India on the head, you know, like that. Different ways of carrying the suitcase. So when we try to avoid our karma, we are just moving the suitcase from one end to the other, to the head, to the shoulder, to the back. The only way we can really be relieved from karma is by devotional service. We're getting there. Hare Krishna Maharaj, which leg of Dharma remains? It was truthfulness that remained. There are four legs of Dharma: cleanliness, mercy or compassion. Which am I getting at? Cleanliness, mercy, compassion, truthfulness. Austerity, thank you so much. Austerity. So those were already gone. But truthfulness still remaining. Not that people are truthful in the age of Kali. Not at all. Everyone is a liar. Yeah? And one who says that he is not a liar, he is the biggest liar of all. But truth is still looked upon as a virtue. You know, a little further down in Kali Yuga, truth is considered the same as insanity. You know, you got to be out of your mind to speak the truth. You know, now we still have some regard for the truth. That's it. And there was one more page, and we'll just finish by lunchtime. You mentioned that Krishna is behind everything. So are the mistakes we commit really our mistakes? Should we be accountable if Krishna is behind everything? Yeah, Krishna is behind everything. Doesn't mean that Krishna is doing everything. Krishna is also giving us some responsibility. So he gives us some power to do things. So Krishna he gives us power. And then within that power, we can make mistakes. Yeah. It's not Krishna's desire, but Krishna has given us independence. Why? Because Krishna, he wants us to choose. He wants us to choose for him. Yeah. Because Krishna is inviting us to join him in the spiritual world in an eternal loving relationship. But love must be done out of choice, not out of force. Therefore Krishna had to give us independence. And therefore Krishna is behind that independence. And therefore we can make mistakes. And it's not Krishna who is responsible for making the mistakes. You mentioned that in the early days the devotees were very strict and didn't go to the movies. In your opinion, why are things so different now? Well, it started with Srila Prabhupada in what you call the inaugurational period of the movement. And at that time, people were very new, they didn't know much, but they were very enthusiastic by Prabhupada's association. So in many ways, the standards were sometimes not always proper. You know, now we know a lot more. We know better now how to offer the flowers. We know better now how to chant the prayers. Now we know how to bow down properly. So in that way we have more knowledge. But they were very enthusiastic. Then came an era at the end of Prabhupada's stay on the planet where his young leaders began to take over. And the young leaders, they were a bit strong with the other devotees and a bit militaristic. And after Prabhupada left, for a period, the movement was very, very, very militaristic and strict. There was not, like when I told you I went from Vrindavan to Amsterdam Temple, when I came to the Amsterdam Temple, one of the things they told me was, don't think, do as you're told. Yeah. Now, okay, that's a little difficult for many people. Yeah, to be honest, right? To be very honest, a lot of us would not be so happy if somebody tells us that, you know, don't think, do as you're told. But that was the predominant mood, and I found that a little difficult. Yeah, and I'm sure some of you might also not like that. So, as eventually I went back to India, where there was more space, you know. So the movement was a bit like that. It was a few older devotees and many, many newer devotees, very new devotees. Now, in the mid-80s, the leaders, after Prabhupada, they became leaders when they were very young. Some, they became world leaders at the youngest was 28 years old. That's quite young to become a big, big world leader. So they had difficulties to maintain it. And in the mid-80s, some of these leaders, they left. So then people lost faith in the leaders. And when they lost faith in the leaders, people became again more individualistic. And suddenly everyone started to think for himself. And we got into that era, the era where everyone had to figure out everything for himself. And you couldn't tell anybody anything anymore. Even somebody who was brand new would say, well, I don't agree with that. And you go like, you know, look, I've been around for, you know, 35 years, and, you know, this is how Srila Prabhupada wanted it. Well, I'm not convinced that this is how Srila Prabhupada wanted it, you know, they say. And they're just around for 2 weeks, you know. So the time of individualism is what we have now. It came after the breakdown of faith when some leaders left. The movement never recovered from that breakdown of faith. And never again. In those days, the energy was so bundled. Everyone had faith in the leader and would get behind the leader. Now, you know, we have many gurus and different groups form around different gurus. And sometimes when you see one guru comes, then there's a certain group of devotees in the temple. And then the other guru comes, and then there's other devotees in the temple. It's a time when we are not all together anymore. We were all together. It's like if it was, okay, we do a book marathon, then everybody did it. Everybody. You know, it's like everybody would have done it. Now, some do it. So, the individual era that we are in is giving people more need to be individually responsible. That is good, because ultimately out of our own choice we're practicing Krishna consciousness, we'll be stronger in the long run than if we're doing it because we're told. Yeah. So I think it's Krishna's arrangement that we're going through this phase. In the future, a time may come that circumstances force us to come more together again. For example, if the economic crisis will really hit, if finally the Chinese will succeed in creating a worldwide bankruptcy by, you know, bringing in, killing the local economy, well, then, you know, all that we can do is return to the land altogether and plow the fields and milk the cows and chop firewood and chant Hare Krishna. Maybe those days will bring us again more together. I see, for example, when I'm in Eastern Europe, I'm in some countries where people are not wealthy. And there, it makes sense to work together. Here, why would you work together? Everyone has his own house, his own economy, his own everything. You know, why would I work together with you? I have my own house, I have my own income. I don't need you. I said, we'll meet each other from time to time, but I keep my own privacy. So this modern economy has separated us. And when life will go back more to the basics, we'll come back together. I'm almost done now. I heard you say before that vegetarian foods of like soy or sausages, which resemble meat, can be mentally contaminated. How can soy, which is offered to Krishna and accepted as prasad, be mentally contaminating? Srila Prabhupada, for example, told us when we drink water from a bathroom that it is mentally contaminated. And if you want, I can take you to Singapore to a restaurant, and in that restaurant we can have some chicken together. And the chicken, the skin is there with the bumps, everything, and also the bone. You can just really like rip the flesh of it, all pure veg. It's just not very nice. I can give another example. I have a proposal to reorganize the Lanesia temple. So the deities will send them to Mamacharya's house. And instead here, we'll make a bar. A bar. Instead of the altar, we'll have a bar. And, you know, the swamis will serve it out. Beer, wine, everything. Alcohol-free. All alcohol-free, Prabhus.
Here you go, you know.
It's all within the 4X, bona fide, completely bona fide. Yeah, absolutely. It's all alcohol-free.
Here you go.
I mean, can you imagine that if we would start a Sunday program like that, that one day we go, you know, somebody will say, look, you know, you got something stronger than this stuff. You know, you got something, you know, got a little bit of Shakti. So, Srila Prabhupada once said, Krishna consciousness is a cultural conquest. So, yes, if I'm not per se against soy sausages, as long as you don't serve them to me. I can't handle them, I can't swallow them. I would rather eat the preparations that are described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Or to prepare, you know, if devotees could learn those, then every bite reminds me of Krishna, the spiritual world. Because it can tell you one thing, there are no hot dogs in the spiritual world. I'm really sorry. Not even vegetarian ones. That's all I have to say. If one has lots of suffering in this life, does that mean that this could be the last birth of this person, he or she could be on his way back home, back to Godhead? Well, that's a little hard to say. You know, there's lots of people with a lot of suffering who may have to go a lot more lives. But if a devotee, sometimes they say, if a devotee is very dear to the Lord, sometimes the Lord gives him a lot of tests like that and purifies him very quickly so that he can go back to Godhead. That is true. I thank you for all your questions. That was a lot.